Now, John Milton wrote a poem, Paradise Lost. Some of you read it, perhaps all of you have. He had Satan cast out of heaven and setting up triumphant in hell. Well, hell and the bottomless pit are identical, and Satan has to especially be given a key before he can get in, or before he can even open it. And so the devil isn't in hell. The world, we learn from Daniel that there are princes over various kingdoms. Remember, the prince of the kingdom of Persia, the prince of Grecia, then Michael, the prince of the children of Israel. But when Jesus speaks of the devil, he says he's the prince of the world. He's over all the others. And so he's going to make all the trouble that he can and all that God will permit him to make. And I feel that in order to bring a deeper woe, now this is the first woe, the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall, or having fallen, from heaven under the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. The words bottomless pit occur in the book of Revelation 7 times. They occur only 2 other times, but not as bottomless pit. In Luke, when the demons said to Jesus, they entreated Jesus, don't cast, send them forth into the deep. That's the same word, bottomless pit. And when Jesus said, say not in thine heart, I shall descend into the deep, that is to bring up Christ from the dead, again, it is the same word. He opened the bottomless pit, and there rose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. Notice the 16th chapter and the 10th verse may give us a little clue to this. The fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. Now this doubtless is spiritual darkness, utter confusion, absolute confusion. Remember the statement of the book of Luke, men's hearts failing them, for looking after those things that are coming upon the world. And he said, the sea and the waves roaring. Now notice what comes out of the pit. There came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and of them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. Now these will be demon forces. They're not literal locusts, because they don't eat grass nor trees. You know what grasshoppers eat. Did you ever see an invasion of grasshoppers? When they're really destructive. I've seen ears of corn, green ears, of course, lying on the ground. They had gnawed the hole, what held the ear on the stalk, in two. I've seen them on top of a fence post till you could just lay your hand down and everything under it would be grasshoppers. And they can ruin a field quickly. In the National Geographic, there was a story, a man wrote it about, he was in Egypt and he was using a plane to poison grasshoppers, and he made a sachet with his plane loaded with poison. And when he came back, they said, do you know how many you killed? No. The man said, we figure approximately 6 ton. That'd be several grasshoppers, wouldn't it? Well, that's what locusts do, but these are demon locusts. And they're told not to bother anything that is green, but they're told to hurt men. Only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And it was given to them they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. Now this will be 150 days. We believe the devil is cast down from heaven, and I can show you that on the chart. 250 days before the middle of the week, the first woe covering the 150 days, the second woe 100 days. By deduction, we arrive at that. Then the third woe, the great tribulation. And like a torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. I have been stung by nearly all the common insects, black yellow jackets, ground yellow jackets, black wasps, yellow wasps, honeybees, bumblebees, and once by a stinging scorpion. I believe theirs is the most painful. In the east and in the deserts, they grow much larger. I don't know whether there are any around here or not, are there? We got some saying yes and some saying no. There are lots of them in Oklahoma. I picked up a rock one day and one stung me right between the fingers. But they've got a tail that they carry curled up, and a bat. I read about the bats in the deserts of Arizona. They'll eat them, but they clip that tail off with their beak before they eat them. They don't have a beak. The sixth verse is very interesting. In those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Now, in the New Testament, we have some men controlled by the devil that couldn't do their own wills. You remember in Mark 5, let's turn to there just a moment. Here was a man, this story is given us by three different ones of the writers. You'll notice in Mark 5, just a moment. The third verse says of this fellow, he had his dwelling among the tombs. What a strange place to live. And no man could bind him, not with chains. He had often been bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. Now here's a man that couldn't do his own will. He was doing the will of the devil. You remember the little boy? I think we can find something about that in Matthew 17, a verse here. The 15th verse, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is lunatic, and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and oft into the water. You see, here was a child not able to do his own will. You remember the woman in the 16th chapter of Acts that followed Paul and Silas, brought her masters much gain by her soothsaying, and Paul cast the demon out of her. But here are demons on a wholesale fashion, tormenting men, making them so miserable that they want to die. Men, by nature, want to live. You know how you prove that? Every drugstore, every drug company, every doctor, every hospital, every nurse indicates that men want to live. If they didn't, they wouldn't go to the doctor. They wouldn't go to the hospital. I want to die. I know there's some suicides, but so much of the time I fear that there is a mental derangement before suicide comes. And so here is a case of men being so controlled by Satan that they will want to die, but they can't die. They won't know how to die. Now, I have no explanation for that. Just the fact that death will flee from them. They will seek help in death, but it won't be there. A little bit of detail about it in Revelation 12. Notice the star isn't dealt with as an inanimate object. The star that fell from heaven is given a key of the bottomless pit, and he opened the bottomless pit. Now, I've got some things written down here. I just jotted them down, and they're not in print or anything. In the book of Job, we read of the deep, in Ezekiel and Deuteronomy, and in the Psalms. In the New Testament, we have the word Hades. It is said to Capernaum they'd be brought down to the sides of the pit. Incidentally, the Greek word is Hades. The way it's transliterated, you would pronounce it Hades. In Matthew 5:22, we read of Gehenna. Now, Gehenna is used as a picture of the lake of fire, and I want to turn to Mark 9 on that for just a moment. There's some very strong language in Mark 9. We'll dwell here just a moment. You may have an occasion to use some of this knowledge sometime. In the 42nd verse, he speaks of those that offend. The 43rd verse, if thy hand offend thee. Now, this is an inward cutting off, not an outward. Cut it off, it is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell. Now notice this, into the fire that never shall be quenched. Now that reaches on and on, doesn't it? Where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. If thy foot offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life than having two feet to be cast into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched. Where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And if thy and I offend thee, the same thing. And so I just threw that in to show you that there is a fire that will never be quenched. Now here is a word, Tartarus. It's used in 2 Peter 2:4. God cast the angels down to hell. This is a Greek word used only one time in the New Testament. Ephesians 4:9, Paul says that Christ went into the lower parts of the earth. In Luke 8:31, the demons entreated Jesus not to send them forth into the deep. That is the word translated bottomless pit. And then in Romans 10:7, say not in thine heart, who shall descend into the deep, that is to bring up Christ from the dead. Again, this is the word bottomless pit. Now Jesus said in Acts 2, and Peter said it, quoting from the 16th Psalm, thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. There were two compartments to hell. One of them is called a lower hell. In 1 Peter 3:19, Peter speaks of God, of the spirits in prison. Revelation 9:2, we read the first occurrence of the bottomless pit. 2 and 11, then 11:7, we read of it again. In Luke 16:22, we read of Abraham's bosom. In Luke 23:43, Jesus said, "Today shalt thou be with me in paradise." In Revelation 20:10 and 14:15, the same chapter, we read of the lake of fire. And then in the Old Testament, we have the word Sheol. This is Hebrew. Now, this word is never spoken of, never used in the plural. It's never spoken of in the sense of ownership. However, our translators translated it grave 31 times and pit 31 times and hell 31 times. Your Strong's Concordance will show you this. A world of the dead, here's some of the meanings are given to it, as if a subterranean retreat, including its accessories and inhabitants. Hades, an unseen, this is a Greek word now, unseen place or state of departed souls. Now I said the Greek word was Hades. You better keep pronouncing it Hades so people know what you're talking about. It occurs 10 times as hell. And in 1 Corinthians 15:55, some Greek texts give this word as hell. It's translated grieve there. Gehenna, its Hebrew origin is the Valley of Hinnom, used figuratively as a name for the place or state of everlasting punishment, used 12 times. Tartarus, I mentioned a while ago, the deepest abyss of Hades, to incarcerate in eternal punishment. Now, the Lord said in Deuteronomy, "A fire is kindled in my wrath and shall burn into the lowest hell." Now, I stated that hell had two compartments. It's called Abraham's bosom or paradise at one time. It isn't that way now. Paradise is in heaven. Then both good and bad went to the heart of the earth. Jesus said, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so must the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And then I quoted a moment ago from Acts 2, "Thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption." And so both good and bad went there. In Numbers 16:33, Moses speaks of those that went alive into the pit, which is Sheol or hell. Unquenchable fire, I just read that. Blackness of dark, furnace of fire, torment in fire and brimstone, smoke of their torment, lake of fire burning with brimstone, where their worm dieth not, a place prepared for the devil and his angels. I mentioned the lake of fire. It's called the second death. I mentioned paradise, spoken of at 23:43. Then in 2 Corinthians 12:4, Paul knew a man caught up to paradise. In Revelation 2:7, we read of the paradise of God. The word paradise means a park, an Eden, a place of future happiness. The words bottomless pit occur in Revelation some seven times. Depthless, that is, an infernal abyss. The Greek is abyssus. It's used in Luke 8:31 and Romans 10:7, translated deep. Pit, a hole in the ground dug for holding water or other purposes, a cistern or a well, an abyss or a cistern. I just had jotted those down and thought you might like to hear them. Now, any of this that I give you, it's still in the Bible. You can find it for yourself with ease. We got into chapter 6 last week and went over this time when people would be tormented from these infernal creatures that come out of the smoke, which comes out of the bottomless pit. Notice this in Jude 6. The angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness, under the judgment of the great day. And then in 2 Peter, the second chapter, I just read you this to show that there are personalities that are chained away. The fourth verse of the second chapter, 2 Peter says, God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell. This is that word Tartarus. And delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. Now at a later date, Satan will be chained for 1,000 years. So there will be a great horde of creatures that are now in prison. Remember, let's read that in Luke 8:31, just what those demons said to Jesus. This is where the man of Gadara was faced with Christ and the demons, the great host of demons. And notice what they said. The 30th verse, Jesus said, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him. Now, legion could run from 2,500 to 7,500. And they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep. Now, this is the same word translated bottomless pit. And they know that others are there, but they didn't want to go there. And in this time, these men will be controlled by Satan, as was that man who was so exceedingly strong, as mentioned in Luke 8, where we just read, when they seek death. And notice this particular torment is to last 150 days or 5 months. Now, we have mentioned the 250 days before the middle of the week when Satan will be cast down. And this is when he opens the bottomless pit. And so this will run for 150 days. Then the two witnesses will be killed at the end of the second woe, according to 11:12. And this will make this second woe run 100 days. Now I'll try to explain this a little further. Say right here is the beginning of the 250 days. That's when the devil will be cast out. And he releases these creatures from the pit. And then there's a time of torment down here for 5 months. That's 150 days. All right, the second woe reaches to the time when the two witnesses are killed. Notice, when the two witnesses are killed, in the 12th verse, they're taken up to heaven. And in the 14th verse, it says the second woe is past. And we know that the witnesses prophesy for 3.5 years, don't we? All right, then they're killed right in the middle of the week. First woe lasts 150 days, and the second woe must last 100 days. You follow me, or do I lose you? I can always make things so muddy. Well, notice this. Notice the 11th chapter, the 3rd verse, "I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. That's 1,260 days, or 3.5 years of 360 days each. And then they will be killed. That tells us how long they will prophesy. In other words, they will be killed in the middle of the week. You see that? All right. Now back to our earlier part of the ninth chapter, the shape of the locusts. Now, you may think it sounded like weakness on my part. I have read many books on the book of Revelation. In fact, I have many books on the book of Revelation. I've never heard anybody offer anything on these description of these horses. They won't say we don't understand it. They just step over it. Notice what it says. The shapes of the locusts were like unto horses, prepared unto battle. On their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men. They had their hair as the hair of women. Their teeth were as the teeth of lions. Their hair being as the hair of women, a woman's hair indicates her place of subjection, and these will be subject to the devil, but all the fierceness is here. They're called horses, and there's another group in the 17th verse that's called horses. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings were as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. They had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. There that five is again. Perhaps a time of feverish preparation, getting ready for what is to come. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, perhaps meaning the one that opened the bottomless pit, meaning Satan, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, and his name in Greek is Apollyon. God wants the Jewish people and the Gentile people to be able to read this. The word means a destroyer. One woe is past. This is the first woe. It lasts 5 months. There come two woes more hereafter. Remember the angel flying through amidst heaven saying, "Woe, woe, woe, ue, ue, ue." That's about the way the Greek word is pronounced. Ue, kind of a wail-like. And the sixth angel sounded, and heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, coming for the four horns of the golden altar. Do you remember the tabernacle of Moses well enough to know what the golden altar was? There was never anything offered on this altar but incense. No sacrifice. If you want to read the 30th chapter of the book of Exodus, you can read about this altar. And they burned incense on it, and this seems to be a cry from the altar. In other words, prayers. That's my thought about it. Saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. The four angels were loosed which were prepared for an hour. The marginal says incorrectly, the hour and the day, the month and the year, to slay the third part of men. Now this indicates that God calls the turn, and at his hour this will come to pass. We read of Jesus, his hour was not yet come, so they couldn't kill him. And they are, evidently these nations will be held in the providence of God at the river Euphrates. Get you there's probably a map in the back of your Bible that will show the Euphrates running into the Persian Gulf, coming up through by Iraq and Iran and going on around and twisting clear up through ancient Syria and going on north and for quite a ways up. It's a very large river. The Euphrates and the Tigris run together for a while. And it is interesting in studying war how things go. Studying history, I mean to say, because history is mainly wars. But they will be held here. And in the 16th chapter, there is just a word about the Euphrates. The 12th verse says, the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. Just showing where they're going to come from. Kings of the east from all nations. But here it seems to be evidently four powers. Now they're bound. Good angels aren't bound. The devil will be bound. Bad angels will be bound and are bound in Hades or hell. The devil will be bound and cast into the bottomless pit. And as I stated, it isn't ever stated that good angels are bound. They may be hindered, as we read in Daniel, but they're not bound. Now these are loosed for a certain time. You marvel at what God is going to do. Back in the Psalms, we read in regard to the Egyptians that God sent evil angels among them. An evil spirit from the Lord troubled Saul. An evil spirit was in the mouth of Ahab's prophets and caused them to utter lies. He told the Lord what he'd do, and the Lord said, all right, you'll deceive him. There was an evil spirit between a false leader in Israel, as we read in Judges, and the men of his city. And I grew up on the farm, and we had dogs, and sometimes we'd sick the dog after the cows or a hog. Not a good thing to do necessarily, but you may use something bad to accomplish something good. And the Lord, it will be time for him to punish men, and he's going to punish them. And then notice again the slaying of the third part of men. I do not know the latest statistic on the human race. I know that it exceeds 3 billion people. You think about this. This will probably be the greatest wholesale killing since the days of Noah. In Noah's day, it took everybody but 8 people. Here is taking a third. But in Noah's day, there were possibly 100 million people, maybe more, I don't know. I'm just deducting a little bit. There are 10 generations from Adam to Noah. I believe the 10th power of 10 goes up to about 100 million, if I remember correctly. And let's just say that, let's say there was an even 3 billion in the earth. There's a lot more than that. China claims 1 billion. I believe India has between 500 and 600 million. In those two nations, there's more than 1.5 billion people. Yes, Russia's, the dominions of Russia are very large. And we have over 200 million. Well, anyway, if there was just 1 billion or 3 billion, that'd be 1 billion of the race. destroyed in a short time. Now, we can see now how that can be done. A few well-placed atomic bombs, like one on New York City, one on Los Angeles, one on Dallas, or Houston, I mean to say, pretty soon our great harbors would be unusable. Pretty soon the only part of our country that we could inhabit would be the mountains and the deserts. The towns would be uninhabitable. And we don't even have to fly a plane to do that. Now we press a button to do it. In about 1960, two of my children graduated when I lived in Tulsa. And in a baccalaureate sermon, incidentally, that school that particular year had 510 children graduate from high school. So it was a pretty good sized school. And this Baptist preacher that preached the baccalaureate said there was a time when our radar picked up something and everybody was on his toes and they were ready to press the button. Radar had picked up the moon as it was coming over the horizon. Sounded like a little thing, but it could have easily perpetrated a war, and it would have been some war. The number of the horsemen were 200,000, and I heard the number of them. I imagine when that was written and people read it, there were possibly those that said, oh, look, there are just barely that many people in the world. And John talked about a war of 200 million people. And I can imagine a comparatively few years ago. In the 30s, the population of the earth is only 2 billion and something. And you talk about an army of 200 million people, you think of what you have to have. Think of the supply lines. Think of the ships. Think of the equipment. I've forgotten how many thousands of men, or hundreds of thousands, we used in invading Europe, Normandy beachheads, beside the point. But my, what a supply we had to have. Then he describes the horses. Seemingly this first part will be largely preparation. The slaying is spoken of here. Thus I saw the horses in the vision, them that sat on them having breastplates of fire, and of jacinth and of brimstone, fire-colored, dusky red, and sulfurous. I wrote that down in connection with this threefold description. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. Now this sounds like, let's put it like this. You have to remember, John never saw a car in his life. He never heard the word airplane. It hadn't been invented yet. The word tank, a few years ago, you know what a tank was? It was where a horse got a drink. Then they began to call these movable vehicles tanks. This may be what John saw. And by these three were the third part of men killed, by the fire, by the smoke, and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. It sounds like chemical warfare. For their powers in their mouth and their tails, for their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt. There was a man in my home one time, and I mentioned to my wife and to him that these creatures had heads on their tails, and one of them said, oh, you're misreading that. That's what it says, isn't it? If you ever hear of anything having a head on its tail, it sounds a little comical, doesn't it? But it's a deadly thing. The rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and wood. Neither repented they of their murders nor of their sorceries. This word sorcery is pharmakia. Strange enough, it's where we get the word pharmacy. A pharmacy is a place of drugs, and this was drugs, and of their fornication or their thefts.